When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Like, it's just the best news that we've had in our celebrity sphere for so long, you know?
I'm as happy as Ben was when he left Jennifer Lopez's house this morning, you know? Did you see that photo?
Hi, I'm Madison Malone Karcher.
And I'm Rachel Hampton, and you're listening to ICYMI.
In case you missed it,
Slate's podcast about internet culture. And on today's show, we are going to have none other than Who Weekly's Bobby Finger and Lindsay Weber talking to us about Bennifer, the sequel. But first,
bzzz.
That's right. Yep. Bzzz. I got it. Yep. The B drama has indeed been incredible.
All over TikTok.
The girls are fighting, and the girls are the beekeepers.
The girls are apiarists.
In case you have somehow managed to miss this little bit of drama flying across your TL or your FYP, TikTok's favorite beekeeper might be a fraud, a phony, a Trump supporter.
Erica Thompson on TikTok goes by @TexasBeeWorks. And honestly, pretty good chance you've seen some of her stuff. She's, you know, had magazine and newspaper profiles and has over 6 million followers.
You might even say the Texas native is the queen bee of TikTok. She's racked up 60 million views for her humane bee removal practices. And look, Ma, no special suit, no gloves.
She does this like ASMR bee rescuing adventure. I don't think you can have managed to be on TikTok and not have seen these videos before.
As soon as I put the queen in the hive, the bees began to go right in. I still had some bees on my hand who weren't leaving because they could still smell their queen on me. So I shook them off so they could find her. Within minutes, the entire colony was rushing to get back into their new hive. You can see how fast they were moving and how the queen was covered in bees. I waited for all the bees to get into their hive, and it was another great day of saving the bees in my pajamas.
But apparently, these videos are staged, which, I'm gonna be honest, we're watching her scoop bees into her hands. I don't really know how one stages this, but somebody on TikTok, and by somebody I mean another well-trained beekeeping professional, is saying it's all fake. The person behind LA Honeybee Rescue, which, you know, by the name is clearly another well-trained professional, is saying Erica Thompson is doing this all wrong.
She's setting a very dangerous precedent. She's not wearing any kind of power gear. She's not wearing, you know, thick pants or gaiters or, you know, work boots. She looks really pretty doing it, and that's because it's faked. And I hate to say that because y'all are going to say I'm coming for her, but it's not. Like, the reason I keep my hair short is so bees don't get caught in it. If bees get caught in your hair, they sting.
The thought I always have when I see Erica Thompson's TikToks is like, she's very calm. There's a real sort of serene beauty to them. I like appreciate being put in a position where I have to think like, hey, these scary things that I'm afraid of also like are kind of cool and gorgeous. And like, what an excellent like bee advocacy position you're taking. But then I think, are all the other beekeepers who wear like the full on, you know, suits, like, are they just chicken shit? No, there's probably a reason. Perhaps.
Yeah. No, yeah. There are full reasons for those, you know, outfits. It's a look. It's a vibe.
It's funny watching this. I feel the same sort of energy that I and a lot of other people get during the Olympics, which is, you know, the 2 weeks of the year where you're like, I know everything about high diving. Like, you're suddenly an expert in a niche thing that you knew nothing about a month ago. That's me in beekeeping right now.
Tune in next week where Madison will tell us how to save the bees in a way that won't
get canceled. When Madison's very stung.
Well, that's all the time we have for bee drama, because today's show is a crossover special. Don't fucking do it, Madison.
Because?
Anyway, one of the internet's biggest stories in the past few weeks has been the reunion of one of the early aughts' most iconic celebrity couples. That's right, we are talking about Jennifer Lopez and Ben Affleck reuniting and giving us Bennifer 2.0?
3.0?
I don't know, actually. What I do know is that they're ushering in a kind of renaissance of 2003, a simpler time that we all clearly needed to return to. And by we all, I really mean we all, because none other than Diddy also posted a throwback photo with J-Lo, confirming not only that she's still the nude-lipped legend we all knew she was, but that we all just want to get in on the Bennifer action.
Here at ICYMI, we recognize the impact of Bennifer on the culture, but neither of us can truly claim expertise on early aughts celebrity. But to help us properly contextualize the reemergence of Bennifer in this new era, this new very online era of social media gossip and anonymous Instagram posts and, you know, who needs paparazzi when everybody has a phone, we tapped two of our favorite experts, the host of Who Weekly, Bobby Finger and Lindsay Weber, to join us in our fake studio and help us make sense of Bennifer 3.0.
17.0.
After the break, we'll be back with Bobby and Lindsay to talk about the celebrity couple that is all the buzz.
Again?
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
We are back with two delightful guests, Bobby and Lindsay of Who Weekly. Welcome. Hello, Crunch Crunch.
Hi, Crunch Hey. Crunch. Thanks for having us.
We're so glad you're here to discuss the topic of not just our generation at this point, several generations, I think
at
it's
least
fair to
three.
Say.
Several.
At least three.
We are talking about Bennifer, the return of Ben and J-Lo, and everything old is new again.
We're so happy. I'm so happy. Even just you saying it, I'm thinking about it. Then it's making me so happy. I've yet to be like, it's just the best news that we've had in our celebrity sphere for so long, you know?
I'm as happy as Ben was when he left Jennifer Lopez's house this morning, you know? Did you see that photo?
That was actually the first thing we were going to ask is, have you seen the smirking Ben
picture? Are you
kidding? I love that you brought that up.
It's so wonderful. Oh.
Oh, so great.
Do you have a Ben Affleck Google alert?
No, because, well, technically, Bennifer isn't really our purview, like, in the main feed of our podcast. Like, it's really funny because it's like the who's are our job, but the them's are, like, our hobby. So it's like, it almost feels we're off the we're off the clock when we talk about Bennifer. Yeah. It does make it even more joyful that it doesn't feel part of our purview, which is, I didn't even think about that until now.
Yeah. Like when Rita Ora started dating Taika Waititi, it was like exciting, but it was also like, gotta do some work, gotta do some research, which again, like, we're very lucky to have jobs where our research is looking up like gossip about Rita Ora and Taika Waititi. But Bennifer is just like this, like, pure moment. It's this pure moment we can just be the audience, and it's a lot of fun.
Can you kind of tell us the difference between a who versus a them?
Sure. Who is like, who is that person? It's like somebody you would see on a tabloid in the airport and be like, oh my God, who is that even? Like, I don't even like, not like I don't recognize, like, I just really have never heard of this person. And the Addison Rae or sorts, types of celebrity. And a them is like, oh, I know them. Oh, I've heard of them. Oh, whatever. And yes, this obviously differs across generations, across, you know, where you're from or whatever. But we're really trying to this is kind of the who, them question of it all.
This dichotomy naturally being the core of the Who Weekly podcast.
The crux. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Rachel and I must fully disclose that we perhaps hypothetically missed Bennifer round one.
Were you born?
give or take.
Okay. Just please.
Yes, fully born. I will please say, when I heard Bennifer is back, I was like, which Jennifer are we talking about? Is it J-Lo? Is it Aniston? Is it then Madison was like Garner. And I was like, oh, there's so many Jennifers. So fully missed the first wave of Bennifer. So when it all came back and everyone was so happy, I was like, I want to get in on this. Why does everyone care so much?
Do you find yourself like, is it working though? Like having missed like Bennifer 1.0, it's working? Good. Yeah, it's infectious.
You're right. Like, I guess when they were, there's a very specific age of person now who was at the very specific perfect age to be like obsessed with and very much a part of tabloid culture at the time to like really ingest be excited about the Bennifer 1.0, you know? So maybe Gen Z or whatever is less enthused. But I would say that even if they weren't aware of the first time, the J-Lo is still as famous than ever, if not more so than she was then.
It's and J-Lo.
Yeah, like she literally is our president. And Ben Affleck, I think, also stays in the press, you know? Mm-hmm. Maybe they're not as aware of Good Will Hunting as we are and like that whole thing. But that guy, I think he definitely still hits all generations.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. The fame is astronomical. But I guess I'm curious, could you kind of recount for, you know, our younger listeners and perhaps me, the round one celebrity kind of media experience that was like Bennifer 1.0?
Bobby, go for it.
Yeah, well, the two of them were a little before our time in that we were maybe 10 when they were having their big come up, because Ben had been acting for a long time before Good Will Hunting kind of like shot him up and he won his Oscar with his best friend. And Jennifer Lopez had been sort of on the come up since, because she was a dancer first, obviously, so she was on television, she was dancing, but like her big come up came like Anaconda and like Selena time in the mid 90s. So like she was coming up in the late 90s. Ben was like kind of already there but still going up in the late 90s, and then when they crossed paths in the early 2000s, it was like, "Oh, these are two of just like the most famous actors in Hollywood getting together." And this was also when she was becoming a music superstar too, so it was like we weren't quite sure if the music was gonna last, but she was still famous enough that like, oh, two big A-listers are together and their names make a great portmanteau.
There was also a beautiful thing that I think that people loved about them, where, you know, she was Jenny from the block and she was from the Bronx and he was from Boston, and they were both these kind of like hometown heroes coming together, and they both kind of had these like great like hometown hero origin, and they really kind of like fit in this really sweet way. And they also were very, maybe I think to the detriment of their relationship, which they probably said in retrospect a bunch of times before they got back together separately in interviews, they talked to the media. They did interviews. They were lovey-dovey. There's that famous Diane Sawyer interview that we love to reference where she reaches out to him for comments. She's interviewing J-Lo and she reaches out to Ben for comment. And of course, at the end of the interview, she's like, just in time for this interview, I got an email back from Ben. And it's like the sweetest, nicest email about Jen. Just like,
here's what he wrote. I consider myself to be the luckiest man alive, for reasons which should be plainly self-evident after hearing Jen speak for a minute, much less an entire hour.
This is pulling me in already.
Yeah. It was just I think we were like rooting for them, but I also think that the machine of it all really did break them up. So the irony of us all being so into it was what ruined it in that way. I mean, obviously, like, her stardom would go astronomical from there. Like, she was only getting more famous. And he had some, like, substance abuse issues. So he had to go through, like, that. And, you know, and now later, two kids later, one marriage each of them, for each of them, many fiancés for her, but whatever, later, they can now come together, like, mature. And I think as, first of all, as a nostalgic thing, obviously millennials are obsessed, but also we're all now mature. And I think we can also say, like, it'd be so beautiful to reunite with that high school fling or whatever. And like all of a sudden you're both mature adults and like, wow, is it going to work? You know?
Yeah. And I think the fact that it's happening in the on like the tail end of at least like America's battle with the pandemic, mm-hmm. like so many people in the United States are vaccinated now. Like there's a very easy parallel to make between like going back to normal. And I know like there's a whole conversation to be had about normal, but like that feels so normal. It feels so dated that it's like, oh, wow, maybe things are making a turn. And like, even though that's absolutely wrong and not the case, there is something like conceptually and thematically very comforting about like these two people returning to a better time and maybe doing it better the second time around. You know, like there are so many weird metaphors to make with this relationship that I feel like people are applying, at least I'm applying, that only make it more interesting, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. You mentioned, Lindsay, the kind of machinery driving them apart. And I'm curious as to how much you think like the gossip blogs, I'm thinking kind of like Lainey and Perez, kind of fit into that machinery, and then how you kind of see that their place currently, like in 2021 versus 2003.
I mean, I think back then it was kind of the beginning, or at least like the very beginning of online tabloid journalism in terms of the blogs. Like because they really hit their stride when I was in college, so this was before that. And things were happening. More people had more access, more cell phone more cameras on cell phones, more, you know, just kind of like everything in your face and just overwhelming amounts of attention on something like this, and more just outlets for the pictures to go. And that was maybe new for everyone. That was new for them. It was new for us as consumers. And now we're more used to it, maybe. I don't know. Like, I can't say it's better. It's probably worse. It's probably gotten worse. But at least they know what to expect, you know, and at least like maybe there's a world in which they can have a little fun with it versus just being terrified. And maybe he's come into just more of an acceptance of that in his life. And maybe they found new ways to control the narrative that maybe they didn't have before. Maybe that's how it works, you know, like more places to be private, more money so that more
richer,
big houses to be private in. They're richer. They can get more done with more money. I don't know. There's lots of factors, I think.
Why do you think that everyone kind of lost their minds again in 2021 over this kind of like specific couple?
I mean, it is, I can't imagine a more, we're inundated with C and D listers. I can't imagine a more A-list pairing. Like, everyone's on the same page with knowing who they are and what this kind of quote unquote means. It feels, you know, there's no one you could send this to who wasn't like, whoa, you know, even somebody who maybe doesn't care about celebrities that much would still be like, oh, interesting, like crazy, you know?
It was nostalgia, but it was also like the very recent history of Jennifer Lopez's like relationship drama. Her on again, off again stuff with A-Rod was like sort of like in turn funny, but then also kind of sad because there were allegations of cheating. And then there were like the weird things where they were like, where she got mad that people purported that they broke up, remember? And she made that TikTok that was very defensive, that was like, how dare you, like, love wins or whatever, where it was like, you're out of your mind, Jennifer Lopez. Like, this is wild. Like, she's just one of those famous people that is so famous and so successful and so, like, in this weird bubble that, like, she's completely unrelatable. And so to have this completely unrelatable person who had just broken up with this guy who, again, we never knew the details for sure, but, like, probably cheated on her, like that's sort of what it seemed like. And she was like, I've had enough of this, to go back to this person who may be like the only other man on the planet who, like, apart from Mark Anthony, but like who, like, is an option at this point. She's so famous that, like, how could she can't just get with an Ana de Armas equivalent in a way. Like Ben Affleck can, like, be seen dating some, like, not normal girl, but like B-list person, up-and-coming person. Jennifer Lopez, like, needs someone way up there, someone she has history with.
How do you guys feel? Because round one of this was 2002, so, like, the pace of the internet was much, much slower to non-existent. I'm curious how, like, the rate of digestion of relationship content in Bennifer 3.0 works a little differently, I imagine, now that we're all online and getting TMZ push alerts.
I mean, it's crazy, but it also just feels interesting because it's like photos of celebrities have been so devalued because everybody can take a photo of a celebrity, and also celebrities can post their own photos now. So it's like, why would anyone buy my photo of Pink if Pink is posting photos of herself on Instagram that, like, a tabloid can use for free, essentially? So I think celebrities have kind of grabbed back the kind of narrative of access, where it's like you used to need access and that was the power, and you still do. And now they're like, we're just not going to give you access, like best of luck to you, you know? And that, I think, is very different. But these photos almost felt like, I mean, they're worth like $1 million all of a sudden. We had this like this renaissance of kind of, we need to see more photos of these two together. And I think that is increasingly rare in terms of like the tabloid landscape. So I don't know, it feels very different. It also feels like everything is just so fast that we're getting a photo a day here, you know, and we just got to keep up.
It's just like, it felt like a throwback. Like, and also like in the conversations, especially with Britney Spears, and I know there was that whole thing with Kate Middleton too. It almost feels like we've outgrown the need for those sorts of invasive paparazzi photos. But again, like Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez, they feel like this exception. Like there's that person on our shoulder being like, you shouldn't be okay with this. We're invading their privacy. But then I'm also like, but I want them to fall in love, and I want to see them happy together. Like it's creating this fight within myself, you know, because it does feel so weird.
I do feel like a less famous couple, though, would have already posted a photo of themselves together on Instagram, kind of like beat the press in a way. And I don't, but I feel like these two are somehow dragging out the fact that it's like, will they, won't they, even though they clearly will and they have. And like, that's kind of a funny thing. And maybe that's because they're retro, maybe because they're thinking about the last time they did this. And like a modern kind of more online couple probably would have already tried to beat the paparazzi at their game by just putting everything out there, you know?
Right. I mean, Ben Affleck doesn't even like have
no
social media.
He has his private
and
J-Lo one.
Has a, yeah, right. What's it called? Like good bill fronting. What's it called? Like positive vibes.
It's called like positive vibes bill or something. It's Goodwill Hunting, but like other words for each of those words.
Yeah, it's like it's.
It's really funny. But like, but
deeply
remember,
corny.
But like you were saying, yeah. Lindsay, remember how Ana de Armas and Ben Affleck announced their relationship on Instagram with a photo on Ana's Instagram that he took? You know, and she was like,
a selfie.
Picture emoji, colon, Ben, or whatever. Like, it was like she gave him credit for taking the photo of her on the beach. They haven't done that yet.
Yeah, and I actually do wonder why, because she does obviously have a huge team of social people that she probably works with. But maybe there's something holding them back. He doesn't use it. She barely wants to use it. So it's a little different than him dating this like younger, more modern, you know, starlet or whatever.
How much do you think their kind of reluctance to, I guess, publicly acknowledge it has to do with the kind of built-in hype that they're creating around themselves? Like the less kind of official photos come through with like their actual channels, the more it's like, are they going to announce it now? Is it going to happen now? Like, let me look at this paparazzi photo to see how close they are.
I think it's a lot of it. Ben is clearly like, Ben has established himself, especially since like being single and dating the nanny after breaking up with Jennifer Garner, like sort of like a bit of a bumbling idiot. And so, but Jennifer Lopez is the most like calculated, like put together type A celebrity we have, one of them. And so I think that they're being very, because of Jennifer, like they're being very deliberate about what they reveal, when they reveal it. Like, even though we're seeing these paparazzi photos, like of them in the car together, of them on the tarmac together, I do believe that they are capable of not being photographed if they didn't want to be photographed.
There's this kind of interesting, like Ben and Jennifer feel kind of like the last traces of like celebrity monoculture in a way. Like, I feel like y'all show kind of really gets at the fact that there are so many different pockets of celebrity now because of the internet, but Ben and Jennifer still command that level of just attention. Like, they're really kind of like the last big stars, where like Addison Rae maybe has a bigger reach than any of them collectively on a social media platform, but like I don't give a fuck who Addison Rae is dating, but like I didn't care about Jennifer 1.0, but seeing them together in 3.0, I'm like, this is important.
You're right. Like, I don't know if I can think, like, just off the top of my head, I don't know of any of many couples from that like early, again, like right before the internet really made everything get fragmented. What it was like, Bennifer, it was,
well, Gwyneth and Brad at that point, for briefly, that was a while ago, but when Gwyneth and Brad Pitt dated, that was big, right?
Yeah,
Brad and Jennifer, obviously, Aniston. Mm-hmm.
And the Beyonce and Jay-Z was a big thing because their relationship was rumored for so long and they refused to confirm it and everyone knew. And so, but like that was a thing that people talked about. And like, you're right, we don't really have this thing anymore.
We had it for the briefest of moment when Brad and Jen, you know, touched hands on that red carpet and everyone. Right.
But also when they did that reunion, remember when they did that reunion over, like, during the pandemic, they were on Zoom and Brad was like, what's up, Jen? And, like, everyone lost their fucking collective. His hair looked really
his
good.
Hair.
But, like, everyone lost their collective minds. And I think it kind of really points to the fact that I think people really miss. They miss that celebrity monoculture in a way where it's like, these are big people who are getting involved with each other.
I would love monoculture to come back. Like when we all watch the same stuff, like live TV ruled. You're right. Like, we don't have that because of all the streaming services and just fractured media. And I think we all crave that.
It's like, I am alone. Everyone is at this party without me.
It's true.
And I will never be invited.
We're all at the party with Jennifer and Ben. We're all there.
Well, thank you both so much for being here with us today on ICYMI. Again, this is Bobby Finger and Lindsay Weber of the podcast Who Weekly. This was a blast. I've learned
thanks
so
for having
much.
Us.
It's really fun. Yeah, thanks for having us. We so rarely get to talk about thems. Yeah.
Long live Bennifer 3.0.
And that's the show. We'll be back in your feed on Wednesday, so please subscribe. Our episodes are free, and it's the best way to make sure you never miss a show. Please consider leaving us a rating and a review in Apple Podcast. Tell your friends about us. No one has taken us up on the offer to purchase a Skywriter to do some promo for the show, but that could be you.
You can also
always follow us on Twitter at ICYMI_pod. Get up in our mentions, send us good TikToks, or feel free to shoot us a DM if you've got questions about why teens on TikTok think Helen Keller is a hoax. I really wish I were kidding. And of course, you can always, always, always drop us a note at icymi@slate.com. Who knows? We might just have you on the show, covered in bees.
ICYMI is produced by Daniel Schrader. Our supervising producer is Derek John. Forrest Wickman is Slate's culture editor. And Gabe Broth is editorial director of audio. See you online.
Buzz buzz.
Don't bring up Justice Scalia when we're talking about Ben Affleck.
You brought
and Jennifer
up
Jeffree
Star.
Yeah, really.
Okay,
you,
that's okay. Oh, that's
the
fair.
Call is
that's
coming
fair.
From inside the house.
Sorry. I stand corrected.
Hi, this is Dahlia Lithwick, host of Slate's legal podcast, Amicus. If you're listening to this show, you might be interested in Amicus's live show that we're hosting in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, May the 14th. My colleague, Mark Joseph Stern, and I will be talking to some amazing guests, including Sherrilyn Ifill and a sitting state Supreme Court justice, all about how originalism, a relatively recently invented way of interpreting the Constitution, has taken over the Supreme Court and radically reshaped the law. It's been doctrinal rocket fuel for the conservative legal movement and facilitated the rolling back of abortion rights, the expansion of gun rights, and the obliteration of the separation of church and state. And as another wildly consequential Supreme Court term careers to its end, the court's originalists are on a tear. But there's something you can do about it, and we hope you'll join us in D.C. on May 14th to explore the possible pathways out of the current situation. Go to slate.com/amicuslive for tickets.